You know, due to the unusual market volatility of the last few weeks, I've decided to change things around a little bit and bring in a market expert. If you follow this show, you know this gentleman. He is the chief investment strategist of CFRA. He's a regular guest on the show because he takes an historic approach to the market, focusing on market history, valuations, momentum, and other things like that. CFRA is an independent equity research firm, which was acquired by S&P Equity Research Department in 2016. And I mention it because Sam is well known in the industry for being affiliated with S&P Equity Research. So all that said, I'd like to welcome Sam Stovall to the show. Hey, Sam, welcome to the show.
Hey, Steve, good to talk to you again.
So let's get right to it. We've had, in one way, a very unusual type of volatility. We had all of this low volatility for so long, and market experts have been talking about it. I know that I've been talking about it with clients, but everybody's been feeling that it hasn't been quite right. What kind of context can we put the low volatility in first before we get to the high volatility?
Well, you're right. 2017 had two things going for it. First off, we had more than 60 new all-time highs, which was twice the average for any year that had at least one all-time high. At the same time, we only saw 8 days in which the market was up or down by 1% or more, as compared with an average of 50 every year since World War II. What I found out was that in the years following such high number of new highs and low volatility, volatility actually got back to the average number in that second year. So we're actually seeing history repeat itself, because volatility has most definitely picked up early in this new year.
What's breathtaking about it is that it seems to have picked up in like 3 seconds flat. You know, there wasn't any real warning. I think some of it has to do with the fact that there's a saying, markets rise in a stair step fashion, but they go down in an elevator fashion. And perhaps the reason is that fear is a stronger force on our behavior than greed. Any comments on that?
I absolutely agree. I actually believe that adrenaline enhances memory retention. That's why we remember where we were when tragic events occurred. And that's what the financial media tries to instill in viewers every day. So when these financial shows say, the world is coming to an end tonight at midnight, tune in tomorrow to see if it really did, you know, they just want to maintain the viewership by creating some sensational commentary. And I think that is human nature to be drawn to that.
Yeah. And I think when you see the market down a lot, you get that kind of, you know, terrible feeling in your stomach, you know, like an elevator going down too fast. And you kind of wonder, you know, where is it ever going to end? Or is the elevator going to kind of crash on the floor and it's all over? I'm going to lose everything. I'm sure in your statistical analysis, if people stayed put, there really isn't any, you know, evidence that they crash and burn, you know, to zero.
Exactly. Even in the great crash of 1929, you only lost money when you sold. The market did not go to zero. In fact, the most recent bear market, in which we lost almost 60% of the S&P 500's value, got back to break even in only 4 years. Even somebody who retired on the day that the market peaked has 20 years to live in retirement, and therefore, you know, the first 4 years, they're just waiting to get back to break even. You know, if you don't have 4 years, then you should not be invested in equities. But still, don't make the biggest emotional mistake of turning a paper loss into a real one.
Okay. That's exactly what my experience and my studying in the market has shown. And you're seeing the same thing in your statistician. So let us take a look at what just happened. Now, you know, this is going to be aired, you know, the week after next. Valentine's Day, let's put it that way. So as a Valentine's Day present to all of you, we're going to talk about how terrible the market was in the weeks following January. First of all, let's talk about January. This is what's so weird. January was a fantastic month, surprisingly.
Well, January is usually a very good barometer as to what is likely to happen for the remainder of the year. If you've ever subscribed to the Stock Trader's Almanac, you do know the old saying that as goes January, so goes the year.
Mm-hmm.
Both Yale and Jeffrey Hirsch are friends of mine, and I took that advice and took it one step further and found that it even works for sectors and sub-industries within the S&P. But it's a very good indication that if investors are willing to pile into the market in January, we have had about an 11.5% price gain in the remaining months of the year, along with a batting average of about 85% of the time the market went up in the remaining 11 months of the year after it posted a positive January.
Well, you know, calendars are, in a sense, fictitious. They're just, you know, you mark one day and then you mark another day and then you build a system. You know, the world, you know, revolving around the sun doesn't really care about it so much. So January seems a little arbitrary, especially considering that just a week later, pretty much all of January's gains were wiped out. So where does that put us?
Well, I agree with you that you could say that it's really more of a continuum than a calendar, but businesses work on the calendar year, or a lot of them do, and they enact their budgets in January. Also, pension funds tend to add money to their portfolios in the beginning of calendar years.
Right.
Usually, we wait to see February in terms of bonuses, and we start to max out 401ks early in the year. That's why the old adage of sell in May takes place, in my opinion, is because of a lack of capital inflows after a lot of money has moved into the markets into the first 4 and 5 months of the year. So, yes, I still believe that there is some effect from the calendar, and that's why seasonality is not something to be ignored.
Okay. So, how far ahead of itself, when you look at these moving averages and you're looking at historic rise or fall in the market, and then you see, hey, the stock price went way above that average. How far above that moving average did the S&P get in January?
Well, it got 7% above its 50-day moving average and 14% above its 200-day moving average. And please excuse my nerdiness right now, but both of these measures were more than 1.5 standard deviations above the mean, or in other words, pretty rare occurrences and levels of excess that really had to be worked off, either in time or price change. And what we found was it had a big impact in price in a very short period of time.
Yeah, so it came right back down to the averages, would you say?
It came down to the 50-day moving average. Actually, both the Dow and the S&P broke below their 50-day moving averages, which is what I think contributed to the mass sell-off, the 1,000-point decline, mainly because it then triggered sell stops for investors who had been riding this bull market upward and kept elevating the level at which they want to get out in order to lock in profits.
Yeah.
But we're still well above our 200-day moving average.
All right. So the 200-day moving average, not to get too nerdy, but this is a more serious number because it takes into account more time. And so if the market would continue to fall, where is that 200-day moving average number?
If the market were to continue to fall, or at least go down to that 14% decline threshold, it would be around 25-35 on the S&P 500.
What does that mean for the average viewer? Where is the S&P now?
What that means is that from the January 26th high of 28.73,
okay,
it would be about a 14% decline or a mid-level correction, but certainly not the beginning of a new bear market.
Okay, good question there. So we're still within the framework of a bull market. What number, is there such a thing as a number, but where would the market have to go to signal a change in direction to a bear market?
Well, we would have to lose about 560 points in total on the S&P 500, we would have to lose 20% off of the most recent high, which was 28.73. because that is the definition, if you will, of a bear market.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here is where you could be splitting hairs by saying, well, wait a minute, so 19.5% is a correction, but 20.5% is a bear market.
Yeah.
And the answer is yes, because humans are compartmentalizers. We like to put things into categories, mainly because like a pullback is 5 to 10%,
yeah.
A correction is 10 to 20%, and a bear market is 20% plus. First off, because it's easier to categorize them. But second, the deeper you go into a decline, the greater the percent change needs to be in order to get back to break even. If you lose 5%, yeah. It only takes 5% to get back to break even.
Mm-hmm.
If you lose 50%, it takes 100% to get back to break even.
Right.
So I think that's why we break them into those three categories, so that we have a better feeling for what is the magnitude of the following recovery that is needed to get back to the starting point.
Okay, interesting stuff. But as of now, we are still well in bull market territory. My guest, Sam Stovall, Chief Investment Strategist of CFRA. Sam, thanks for taking time to talk with us today.